This is CliffCentral.com.
The Leadership Platform is brought to you by Sibanye, a proudly South African multi-commodity mining company. At Sibanye, we believe leaders are made, not born. We also believe we can create a sustainable legacy by helping to develop tomorrow's leaders today. We are proud of our partnership with the Leadership Platform and will continue to support leaders who are committed to growing our country. Sibanye, we are one. Visit us on sibanyegold.co.za.
The Leadership Masterclass. Louis and Richard, we've spoken about Brexit last week, and you know, this also happened to be the time when we spoke about adaptive leadership and the context and so forth. There were a lot of ideas that were shared around what leaders have to face on a daily basis in terms of the changes that happen in the context in which they lead. Obviously, the greater context here is what's happened to Europe, or what is happening to Europe with the decision that Britain has taken to leave the EU. But at the heart of what's been happening is not just politics, but it's also leadership. So we thought the developments of Brexit fit in perfectly with what we should discuss for the next half hour in terms of the leadership lessons that we can take out of Brexit. There's a lot of things that can be said in terms of how leaders communicated and how we got to the outcome that somewhat surprised everyone, you know, and that's the most surprising thing, that very few people saw Brexit coming in terms of the outcome that it delivered. So it's very important for us to reflect on what caused the surprise result and what we can learn from it about effective leadership, both in the political and business spheres. So I want us to discuss a few insights around some of the principles that we can take. So the first thing that I thought we should touch on is how much fear was part of the conversation in the run-up to this referendum. So what we saw is something we could call fear-based leadership. And clearly the result thereof was that fear-based leadership doesn't deliver. So a bit of context here. Both sides of the debate engage almost solely in fear-mongering, whether you are talking about immigration or whether you're talking about the possibility of, you know, the economic implosion that will follow if indeed the UK decided to leave. So both sides effectively gambled with the country's future. And clearly, Brexit has now put the spotlight on what I personally call Disunited Kingdom, DIS. So, Louis, let's start with you. How much do you think fear, you know, becomes a handicap as and when leaders try to convince, you know, the population or the followers, you know, the organization in terms of where they want to take the organization to?
Alice, the real challenge with fear leadership is that people seldom measure the consequences, because it's carried by the emotional surge of fear. Now, I've experienced it often in my long life at various levels. Parents sometimes apply that. So what happens is they continue threaten their children with the negative consequences. But it very rarely motivates people. Sometimes people are motivated in spite of the fear leadership. Our country now is very much driven by fear leadership as well with the oncoming election. So you look sometimes for a positive message to come out and you don't find it. It's mainly about, you know, the mistakes and the faults and the dangers of the opposition, whatever your standpoint may be. So I'm worried, because now what's happened here in the Brexit is suddenly the people that were prominent leaders of the exit strategy are just falling away, because they realize it's not the same thing to manage it afterwards. A bit, can I say, similar to Africa, we had the Nelson Mandela age, tremendous, but then it came the period where we had to apply these things, and suddenly it took another kind of leadership, and I'm afraid these guys recognize the fact they're not prepared to tackle that.
Absolutely. In fact, you mentioned Nelson Mandela. We're going to touch on his vision, because it ties in with another lesson that comes out of this. So clearly, fear cannot get you good results. It would get people scared and push them towards a decision that they don't quite fully comprehend what it's, you know, potential, you know, implications would be. And this is what we're seeing here.
Well, in the past, often if you're a sales manager, for instance, or an MD, or whatever the case may be, you often, under pressure, resort to fear and say, people, if we don't do it, we're just not going to make it. Mm. Now, the problem is not the negative you mentioned. The problem is that it's not contextual to a positive solution. So therefore, good leaders always recognize the challenges, but they've got a clear idea where, how to get through that to the other side.
Uh-huh.
And a good leader gets the sense that he's got situational confidence.
Yeah.
In other words, he recognizes the fear. We find that if you don't recognize the negative expectations, then you become a loose cannon. Be dangerous. So a wise leader, a good leader, makes sure that the negative is put into context with a greater perspective in life. Not so.
Yeah.
That's why you sense in the presence of good leaders, you've got this confidence that these guys can handle, no matter what the problem is, because they always have come, we work through it. But it doesn't mean they don't recognize the problem.
So Richard, fear doesn't sell. You're a parent. I'm a parent too.
Also a businessman.
Also a businessman. But we've had instances where, you know, as a parent, you say, you know, to your child, you know, do as I say, or this, you know, is that perhaps an example of how not to try and influence someone using fear?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think unfortunately it's often particularly with children, it's our natural reaction, you know, you do this or else. I think, you know, when you get into the, you know, in the, let's call it the context of a country, for example, you know, fear-based engagement, like you've seen with the whole Brexit environment, is really, really dangerous, because there's elements that you're dealing with in terms of people have a reference point or a knowledge point that they start referencing, or let's call it the lenses through which they view things. You know, your child perhaps is not knowledgeable of what consequences could be,
mm-hmm.
so perhaps. You know, and I think you've got to be careful of, there's a point of fear-based and almost, let's call it informative. So, you know, if you touch the hot plate on the stove, you are going to get burnt. That's not a fear-based engagement.
Mm-hmm.
That's practical. You know, it's learning. It's reality. It's learning. You know,
it's outcome-based.
It's outcome-based, uh-huh. Exactly. And there's a fine line between, you know, educating your child about the outcomes and putting the fear of you-know-who into them. But at the same time, when it comes to adults, and let's take, for example, the Brexit scenario,
mm-hmm.
you know, let's create creating a fear-based culture or fear-based engagement around, you know, immigration, for example. I mean, truly, do people really know and understand all the dynamics of the immigration issue in the UK? You know, when the biggest Googled statement
yeah.
post the whole vote on Friday was, what is the EU? I have to ask myself the question, you know, did they actually know and understand what they were voting for?
Yeah.
Or did the fear-mongering of, we just want to stop people that we don't know and that we don't perhaps have a connection with, an affinity with,
yeah.
coming into our country.
Yeah.
You know, that's fear-based engagement with no facts per se.
Yeah.
You know, no real, let's call it, causal links and connections were drawn. It just appealed to the emotions. So fear-based emotional engagement is really, really dangerous
yeah.
when it comes to adults particularly. And yeah, kids are there, I guess. But yeah, I think there's a very strong line of connection between going, I just see the negative, I just see the fear, and I capitalize on it, or I talk about the factual realities, and yeah, it's when the fact-based logic and reasoning leaves the station and off it goes, you kind of have to worry about what's going to happen
so
next.
So the takeaway from this first lesson is that fear, engaging with people, no matter at what level, through fear
work.
Is counterproductive.
Doesn't work.
So here's a little nugget that goes with this lesson. Someone has posited that out of this context, leaders must be truthful and not talk in fear-mongering speak, or you could say, quote, marketing speak. In this instance,
Don't spin it.
Absolutely. In this instance, Cameron should have told UK voters that the EU structure did need fixing, and assuming he believed that, make the case that he was the person to do that. but as he failed to discern the real concerns of voters, he naively agreed to a referendum, which he probably thought he would win, rather than push for key changes at the EU to better represent voters.
I think there's an important leadership lesson there as well in terms of, you know, there's the high road and the low road in everything in life. And often what informs the high or low road is often what's easier for me. Not what's right. So doing what you're referring to, that takes a lot of work. And it also takes a lot of what, let's call it, political capital. Okay, he's got to really step up to the plate. He's got to create and manage the issues properly. And, that's a lot of political work.
Absolutely.
Pulling the people say so. Well, hey, that's an easy... And also remember, if he made the assumption that he was going to win this one, and that all would be well in the land of the UK, it would have been a case of, oh, well, I don't need to do all this work because the people have spoken.
People have spoken.
And now the people have spoken, and now there's a lot of work to do.
Absolutely. Well, of course, I mean, one can look at, the other aspect of this, that obviously in a world where we have become more reliant on focus groups and, political surveys and those sort of things, and yet people still take this as much of a huge surprise than they thought. I mean, it says something about the structure of how people's views are assimilated in terms of understanding where people are. Would you agree with that,
Louis? Oh, Ellis, I think that's very incisive what you say there. We measure leadership, all the years of experience we had, with a couple of things. Ability to look at the essences of something. Now, leaders capture the essence of a situation. Then we look at, obviously, the contextual confidence, others exactly, or the how they handle the situation. But then we also look at the ability to measure contextual relevance. Now, this is the principle of closing the loop that Richard spoke about too, effectively. So therefore, what we're saying is that leaders must look at the bigger picture all the time. And when you're on an emotional surge, you don't look at the big picture because your reality at the moment seems so dominant.
Yeah.
And this is why things like the emotional reactions on our social media nowadays, where people go up tangents, ministers say things highly irresponsible, and perhaps a week or two later they think differently. So leaders, if you want to be a leader, you must understand, you must look at the context all the time. It doesn't mean Brexit is right or wrong. It means you have to look at the full picture. You say it's a good thing because you like change. You like people to look at the future to make something more positive. So I know you personally feel it could be quite a good thing.
No, at its fundamental sort of level, it could potentially bring good results if a structure that is the EU gets changed for the better. To also adapt the structure towards the future that the people in Europe seek. But this is a nice segue to lesson number two, which in this instance, we could talk about the fact that positive visionary leadership was clearly absent, and that created a negative vacuum. So we have seen many organizations implode and careers of leaders ended because there was no positive or visionary leadership. So how critical are these two elements in leadership, having positive visionary leadership? Because clearly, the context of fear that we've spoken about would suggest that this was absent. Richard?
And it's just a comment, and I'd like to link these two elements. You've also got to be really careful of the context in which these elements are operating in terms of visionary leadership, because here's the problem. And I might be castigated for this comment, but I think you're seeing Brexit is a classic example of democracy gone wrong. And you might look at me and say, well, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, it sort of sounds cynical, but...
Okay, well, let me explain why I say that. In many other frameworks, the principle of massive change or fundamental change is that you need to have let's call it the principle of overwhelming majority and agreement that we're going to do something. So for example, let's go to the business world, company law. If you want to do something major in a company, something not so major, 50%, no problem. But if you want to sell off half the company, or you want to acquire a new company, or you want to do something like that, you have what's called a special resolution, which requires 75% of the people who are going to be impacted by this to say, A, I'm okay with this, let's make this happen.
Yeah.
In many other strains and places in the world, you need an overwhelming majority when you want to make a fundamental business decision or a world decision, whatever it may be. But here you have a democratic referendum process where all you need is 50 plus one vote to make a change to a fundamental structure and environment as big as leaving the EU. And I'm going, hold on a second here. That doesn't sound too clever. You know, maybe you want to make sure that more than just 50 plus one person actually is in play with this, because this is going to have catastrophic impacts on your people. And you kind of look at this and you go, so this whole idea of the democracy and, you know, the majority rule concept. Yeah, I'm comfortable with the majority rule concept, but if it's going to be so major that it's going to affect everybody equally, well, maybe you need a few more people involved. And that kind of, let's call it the visionary leadership that we talk of.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of looking for that visionary leadership that says, okay, guys, you know, 50 plus one vote isn't good enough for us to say we're out of a 40-year relationship
to
here.
Justify
You know, they didn't think that through.
No, absolutely
they
not.
They didn't think that through. Absolutely they set not. This thing up for a, you know, 50 plus one, and, and now that they that plays, the other 40, you know, whatever, realize, sure, hold on a second here, that wasn't so smart.
So clearly we, you know, not only are there these questions now, I mean, we've seen, you know, Cameron resigning, and this morning we learned that the leader of the independents has also resigned.
Nigel's
you know,
resigned,
and you've heard, you also heard that Boris Johnson, the former mayor of London, who was an Exeter campaigner, has also said, look, he doesn't even want to be prime minister. So clearly without that visionary leadership, then what you also didn't get was the sort of leadership that was solutions oriented. Okay. Well, so you had the referendum, but the outcome of the referendum was not the solution.
Well, it's strange that this should be the UK environment, but the good old analogy of the dog that catches the bus he's chasing.
What does he do with it?
Now, what does he do with the bus? the little red London bus. Here we go.
And every leader has been in that situation.
Just reinforce the principle. We've also learned that a clear vision is not sufficient nowadays. What I mean by that is all the great guests we've had on the show, all the years we've written hundreds of articles, is redefining what we mean by vision. Vision has got to, firstly, know where you're going, sure. But secondly, it demands trust in the leader. Now, what I'm getting at here, you know, it's not so much that you say exactly what we want to reach. Yes, that's important. But there must be confidence that the process you're going to do it, or processes. Now, in this case, with a tremendous disruption, you speak of 1,000 processes. It's got to be handled. Now, that's a different kind of leadership. So, therefore, leaders who are good leaders develop a, we call it situational confidence. You must sense them. Now, these guys who don't want to be the prime minister now realize either they don't have it, or they don't believe the people around trust them. This is what Boris did. He went around asking, and he found the guys felt didn't have the confidence in him that he thought they would have.
Yeah.
So we must build trust as well. It's process-driven. Richard is an experienced, but remember the two people we have here on the host as well, listeners. Richard's a very experienced top executive with a CEO background as well. Ellis now is a very experienced international journalist with more than 5 years as the business editor of the biggest business newspaper, the Business Report. Now, that's good experience they have. So what we're saying from a leadership point of view is that there are basic fundamentals. You can't get away with the fact that a good leader must be visionary, but also must have confidence in the process. And every day, there are processes he needs to kick in, not knowing what the problem is going to be. Adaptive leadership, we discussed last week as well.
So we must,
it's a case of nourishment. You must nourish yourself all the time to be able to handle change.
So the people of the UK woke up on Friday not understanding what solution they were looking for. That's for whatever problems they have, whether it's immigration, it's trade, and so forth.
They can't see the process.
Voting in the referendum was not the solution.
No.
So could we say the same thing about us? We have an election coming up in South Africa on August 3rd. Okay, it's a municipal election. We're getting mayors and all sort of folks, you know, pitching to run municipalities. But don't we also have to look at the fact what sort of outcomes and solutions to pre-existing problems do we want those elections to yield, other than just voting?
Very good point. What happened is we have a great many promises floating around. And other basically amounts to you can get what you want by taking away from somebody else. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a...
It's a zero-sum game.
It's a dangerous game. So be careful. The mature people don't have much attraction out there. When they say no, we must knock down. The ANC Youth League, as example, the new one, after the dramatic reign of Julius Malema, they kind of said, listen, we must be responsible, etc. They're saying we must work for what... But I'm telling you, people don't listen to that because of the social media atmosphere. So it takes great leaders, like a Malema. And not Malema specifically in his own way. Yes, I'm speaking of Nelson Mandela.
He's very articulate, though.
Yeah, so no, but he also promises a great many things. Mm-hmm. But if I look at it from an old man's point of view, who on earth is going to make this happen without tremendous pushback in our society? Richard's point just now, the pushback, if you make these dramatic promises, you see, you're not accountable right
now. But Louis,
now,
just on that point, and to Richard's point, I think the most fundamental thing which Richard raised is that the voting public also has to do its homework.
Yes.
Okay. You cannot longer rely on whatever politician that's making a promise and think it would be what becomes, you know. So it's the same thing that's happened here, you know. So we could say it is a time for leadership to emerge that is built on new, stronger foundations of solutions, strengths of possibilities, and tolerance for diverse perspectives.
And there are value-driven. You see, once you trust a person, I don't believe that everybody expects a perfect CEO out there, leader, or a state president. Mm-hmm. I think they believe in certain authenticity, like with Thuli Madonsela, as we had her on the show and we regard her highly. You trust Thuli that the processes she is involved with will get to the truth with integrity, without lying. And this is a great thing. Right now, I think we've lost a lot of that trust. We don't quite believe our leaders have that kind of trust in process of integrity. That's why we bandy around the words corruption so much as well.
Some other thing that we need to talk about, lesson three. Leaders must move from a path of limitation to a more positive path of possibility.
Yeah.
We've spoken about this, Louis, before.
Many times.
Especially in the context of movement.
But remember, we've had the non-linear guys here. Mm-hmm. We've had the neural science.
Great discussion.
It's all about, you know, the brain can be changed and you can adapt new kind of positive thinking. It seems like a cliche, but the truth is, if I can mention one thing, over all the years I've been a leader, as you know, Ellis and Richard, I found one thing, that your basic attitude becomes your reality. So if you don't feed, you don't nourish your attitude on a daily basis, you're going to run and start fear or reactive leadership. So we need to nourish it. Good leaders cannot be good leaders by just not nourish them. All the great people we had on the show, almost consistently, they've got this hunger to learn. They listen to you. They're always learning. The one great leader that was the head of a big gold mining operation, employing 50,000, we asked him now, by the way, what would you do different? Go back. He says, I would listen more. In other words, he will learn more, etc. So I'm just saying that leaders must pay the price for personal preparation on a daily basis, because change will happen and you can't predict all the changes.
Absolutely. So, Richard, I mean, we've got 3 minutes here. Looking ahead now, I mean, do you think that there's a possibility that, you know, there will now emerge the kind of leaders when the next referendum has to take place? Because obviously you have Scotland, you know, saying they want another independence referendum. You have Northern Ireland, you know, there's a debate now about the border with Ireland. So basically the entire UK, the united part, is becoming more disunited. Do you think, therefore, that this situation would help bring about the leadership that understands these core dynamics that we've discussed?
I think what this has highlighted is the lack of unity inside the UK. It's showing up the cracks. It's showing up, let's call it, the age differentials that exist, the old and the young, the new age, the old age.
Imperialistic mindset.
The mindsets. I'm not so sure that this one's going to go away quickly with just, you know, somebody that steps up to the plate and says, hey, I've got the solution set here for you. This is how we're going to solve the problem. Uh-huh. Here's the paint by numbers. I think what we're seeing is an environment that is struggling with almost all the elements that they've got. And I think one of the biggest issues that they're going to face that one has to be real about, is the fact that what worked before is not going to work going forward. And the reality of the economics is also, you know, a play here. And I think, you know, for the first time in a long time, I think the United Kingdom's feeling the pain of the decisions that they made almost, let's call it, on a whim. Without a lot of deep thought. And I think what you're seeing now is the reality. I mean, a credit downgrade within hours of a referendum result is virtually, I don't think there's many countries that have had that misfortune. If you look at where the pound has crashed to, where you know, the conversations that you're hearing, economically, I think they're in for a tough time. And I'm not so sure that there's leadership there that can solve all of those issues with just one foul swoop of a, you know, I'll wave my magic wand and I'm going to solve this.
Alice,
it's an extremely complex issue.
Just finally,
issue.
Sorry.
Your final thoughts?
One thought, and that is the only reliable constant in this changing environment in the world is good leadership. Your question about can they do it, the question is if they don't have good leadership, then what will happen? So I'm just saying there's no alternative to good leadership, and there's no greater need in our country and every other country is good leadership that can see the full context of things.
Thanks. Absolutely. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much. This is where we leave our lessons from BRICS conversation. And I'm sure, you know, listeners, you'll find this to have been quite useful. But remember to also go to the Cliff Central website and get more of the podcasts that we've done, which would provide you with the full picture of the work that we are involved in. So, Richard, Louis, thank you very much. We'll now go to a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll go to our leader interview, and we are pleased to be joined in the studio by a special guest. I'll announce the guest when we come back.
This is CliffCentral.com.